Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, this time with the lovely and wonderful Katie Brand. We're doing a new Kickstarter campaign to fund the filming of Series 12 of Rehearsper, which is starting recording on October the 16th. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com if you want to buy tickets to come and see one of the live shows. No guests confirmed yet, but I'm going to have to start thinking about that pretty quickly because there's not long to go. If you would like to help us film that series, or if you would just like to get your hands on the reward, which is various versions of a brand new emergency questions book for Christmas. It's called Christmas Emergency Questions. It has 500 new questions, all different from the original emergency questions book. 275 of them, plus a few on the cover, etc., are all about Christmas, and the rest are about anything in, under the sun, because emergency questions aren't just for Christmas. They are for life, my friends. We've only launched yesterday. We've been going for 1 day, and we've already got a third of the quite big total, so it's going incredibly well. I know a lot of you are fans of these emergency questions books, and I'm not even sure whether this is a Kickstarter for the book or the podcast, really. But you will get these in time for Christmas, and there will be a great addition to your Christmas Day meal, whether with friends, family, or on your own. It should get the conversation going and get a couple of arguments going, but good ones, I think, rather than dredging up long-held grudges amongst you and your family. So if you would like to contribute, there's all different things you can get, but and different versions of the book, with some of them signed, some with extra questions, and you get a chance to have your name in the credits of the video show. Go to www.gofasterstripe.com/Kickstarter, and that will take you to the Kickstarter page. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who thinks that his car is secretly pining for its previous owner. It's Richard Herring! Yo, yo! What's up? Hello! What's up?
Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. But I was at the Air Guitar Championship the other day with Jessica Knappett's husband. And he calls it a rehearsal. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. So, welcome to the show. I was doing a bit there from that I did to the audience beforehand, mentioning about Oh Frig, I'm 50, which will be on at the Edinburgh Fringe as you're listening to this. Go to Pleasance One. There are still some tickets left, apparently. That's why, for tonight's show. That's what I've been hearing from the box office today. The reviews, though, from the Edinburgh Fringe have been awesome. They've been really good so far. I'm projecting forwards and just guessing on both those things, of course, because it's the past. I'm not even 50 yet, that's as I say this, but I will be by the time you hear it. Not you, you're not that far away in the audience that I will have aged. We're not in a black hole. This isn't the final episode of Doctor Who. I think it's all been shit, Doctor Who. It's for kids, isn't it? Grow up. It's very good. It's brilliant, if you like Cybermen. And things that don't make sense. If you like those, it's good. I've not eaten enough today, I should say, which I think will be... I've been out partying all weekend. As my mum turned 80 yesterday, which Barbara Herring, congratulations to her. Yeah, it's not that old, fucking hell. It's an old for someone from Cheddar. They usually... Once a woman reaches 35, she's usually thrown in a well. Fear of being a witch. So we've been out. I've just been eating way too much and drinking way too much. So I decided to go on a diet today, which is a bad time to go on a diet, isn't it? Because I'm going to be lightheaded and say a load of nonsense. I don't know what's coming out of my head. I have to say, I thought turning 50 wasn't... They did a little celebration for me at turning 50 on Saturday, and we had a meal. And I thought being 50, I wasn't worried about it. Now, like when I was 40... I really kind of went through a massive midlife crisis breakdown, behaving like an idiot, doing all sorts of terrible things. You can read about it in my book, How Not to Grow Up, available from the foyer. I thought it wasn't. I just thought it's not. I'm not worried about 10:50 because now I'm 50. I've actually got some fucking stuff to worry about. When I was 40, I had nothing on my plate, so to speak. So I go, oh, I'm turning 40. What will I do? Now I'm 50. I've got responsibilities. I've got a family and this moving house, and so you know, there's no time to worry about being 50. But they had those little 50s. You know, you get now that they throw little confetti 50s on the table made out of sort of foil and stuff. And I did notice that I was turning those all the other way up, so they said 20. So I think maybe I'm going to be hit by a massive midlife crisis during possibly this podcast. We will see. Anyway, we're going to crack straight on, I think, with this week's podcast. My guest this week is probably best known for being the production assistant on Stakeout. That's why we're here tonight, isn't it, to see that? Going to hear a lot of the behind-the-scenes series of... behind-the-scenes secrets of Stakeout, a show we all definitely remember very fondly. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Katie Brand, ladies and gentlemen. Katie Brand, here she is. Come in. Sit down. Make yourself at home.
Thank you.
Oh.
Hello, I've forgotten about Stakeout.
Had you? Yeah. You were the production assistant. I mean, yeah. That must have been a lot of responsibility.
It was in a really happy period of my life when I was working exclusively for Challenge TV.
Right.
And there were in Maidstone, which is a lovely part of the world. And I would drive to the Maidstone studios and do my production assistanting on various game shows. And there was one game show I worked on where I was the question checker. And I was watching it on the link. You can watch these things being filmed on the link. And Eamon Holmes was the presenter, and you don't mess about with Eamon Holmes. And it was a multiple choice thing, and the contestant was about to win $5,000. And it was a question about fashion. And the question was, who pioneered the pirate look in the 1980s? And the four answers came up, and the woman went, Isby, Laura Ashley. And Eamon Holmes, without blinking, went, "You've just won $5,000. And I ran from the production office down to the studio floor so fucking fast to say, I've got them the wrong way round on the computer and it should be Vivian Westwood. So that's my abiding memory. Thanks for bringing up that awful, frightening memory.
Was that that wasn't Stakeout, though?
I can't remember. No, I think Stakeout, there was one called Stakeout followed by another game show immediately that was the same production team, and they just ran us all together.
Right.
For costs.
Yes.
So yeah, that is my top A1 anecdote to begin any show with. So,
it's good. Well, you must be asked about it all the time, so we'll move on. Although you were telling me backstage you worked on a show where you were a runner for next week's guest, Julian Clary. Do hang around if you can till next week for that show. It should be worth it. But
I was a runner, yes. Yeah. Pretty much 20 years ago to the day, I was a work experience runner at the BBC for Julian Clary on his show All Rise for Julian Clary. And one of my responsibilities as an 18-year-old was to make sure he was, had everything he needed in the dressing room. And he was always incredibly nice to me, always courteous, but he did one thing that used to terrify me, which is I would go and knock on the door and say, "Can I get you anything, Mr. Clary?" And he would say, "I'd like a cup of tea and a surprise." It would just be like, I'm an 18-year-old girl from Buckinghamshire. I'm still technically a Christian. I have no idea what you buy Julian Clary when he wants a surprise. So I would just usually go for a Milky Way.
Yeah. That'll probably work. That'll probably do it.
You can ask him later. He got me a beautiful brooch.
Did he?
Yeah.
You should have worn it tonight. Where is it? Have you lost it?
No, well, I wouldn't say lost it.
It's somewhere in a very treasured...
somewhere in a very special place.
you might meet him in the dressing room. We'll see if you think he'll remember you.
I think he will, because I was a nutty Christian, and right. I remember saying I would pray for him. God.
Was that the surprise? Yeah. And was his surprise going back, "Yes, you've cured me." Yeah. And ruined my career.
No, I don't know if I was going to pray anything out of him in that respect. I just thought generally, maybe just needed a kind word.
Well, I mean, there were so many people in show business that you had to pray for.
Let's do a list.
Let's start. And he's not really very high up on that list. Let's talk about that a little. You've been touring a show about your teenage Christendom. Yes. I was a Christian when I was a teenager, or my parents, when your parents weren't Christians. So I kind of thought, we'll talk about this and you'll turn out your parents are Christians and brought you up as a Christian, but you came to it on your own.
I did when I was 13. I, the only thing that was sort of religious in my background was I went to a Roman Catholic convent school when I was very little. And we didn't do any maths, we just did art and Jesus. That was all we did with the nuns. It was sort of pre-national curriculum. And the only really thing of memory I have that I've still got is a set of rosary beads that I won from a girl in my class called Annabella in a competition to see how many conkers we could fit in our knickers. So that was the kind of Roman Catholic school it was. But I left there when I was little. And when I was 13, it was much later, we moved house and everything. We didn't go to church. I went on holiday with some family friends who just joined this big evangelical church, I was a bit obsessed with it for the time that we were on holiday, so I went to church with them when we got back, and I had this big spiritual experience. I had prayer, I fell down on my back, I fell madly in love with the worship band leader, and that was it. The next 7 years, that was right.
So it was quite a proper happy clappy
and all that entails. I prayed out a demon when I was 15 out of a woman. I mean, wow. I can't. There's no independent verification, but that's for that period of that's what we all believed. It was true at the time, shall we say?
How did that feel? So I've read that you'd done that. So did you really believe that you'd done it, and did she believe you'd done it?
I think she believed it had happened. I sort of backed away, and a vicar who didn't like me came over and carried it on.
Right.
And it was quite a big sort of turning point, because I actually started to lose my faith, such as it was, from that point. Because I thought, are we allowed to swear on this?
Yes, you can say whatever.
I thought it was fucking crazy.
Wow, that was.
And
too...
I, yeah, did you? That
yeah,
was.
Yeah, that
a
was
good
too.
Swear.
I wasn't expecting you to go that far.
But it was very, very weird. And she was sort of lurching all around and being weird. And I was on the prayer team, and she was in my section of a big worship meeting I was at. I went over to pray for her, and I put my hand on her back, and she flicked her head round and went, "You're burning me!" And at that point, I thought, I'm so out of my depth here. I haven't even seen The Exorcist. And I started backing away a bit, and the vicar, Kate, who didn't like me, came over and carried it on, and he dealt with it, and I ran away and thought, what the hell am I doing? What is this? And actually, I told this story recently.
It sounds like you put a demon into someone.
Well, funnily enough, I told this story recently to, Ian Stone?
Yeah.
I told this to him recently, a comedian called Ian Stone, and he said, has it ever occurred to you, Katie, that when you went over to that woman and you put your hand on her back and it burnt her, that was the demon leaving her and entering you?
Yeah,
I was like, thanks a lot,
but
Ian.
That's bizarre. So that woman, I mean, either that woman was possessed by a demon.
Yeah.
Or that woman was pretending to be possessed by a demon for attention.
I think there's a sort of kind third way.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, where we could say she is emotionally disturbed. To such an extent that she sincerely believes herself to have a demon, and that the 10,000 other people in the room were willing to collude in that.
Yes.
And that lent it a sort of authenticity. But no, obviously now I think it's bullshit.
Yeah. I had a sort of strange experience. I had an ex-girlfriend who became very Christian after I'd broken up with her. Because after me, only Jesus will do. Yeah. she joined kind of, one of the more well-known but happy-clappy kind of cultish churches.
One of the more well-known ones.
Yeah, well, it's the... I don't know if it properly is a couple. I did go along, so it felt very weird. But I was walking down... I was in Balham at the time, and I was very depressed, and my life felt like it was falling apart. And I went past the house, and it said... There was a sticker in the window, and it said, "Jesus loves you." And I said, "All right, Jesus, if you love me, give me a sign." And like about 20 minutes later, that girlfriend rang up and said, "Do you want to come to get a carol service with me?" And I went, "Oh God, I better go then, because this might, Jesus has sort of answered, not immediately, but he's got a lot on his plate." Yeah. And that's quite good. 20 minutes wait time is not bad for Jesus.
And yeah, I mean, it's better than Addison Lee.
Yeah. But then I went, and I found the whole thing incredibly creepy. And
fair enough. You meet Jesus halfway. Yeah.
But it was like loads of, it was men in suits.
Loads of Christians.
Well, there's a lot of Christians, but then there were sort of people giving testimonies as these guys in suits stood behind them, saying, "Oh, you've saved my life," and turned around. It just felt like a bit creepy.
Are you sure it was a carol concert and not a Nation of Islam
meeting? Well, I was actually thinking, this will be quite nice. I'm a bit lonely. It'd be nice to go and sing some hymns and remember my own Christian childhood where we did that. And then there wasn't enough hymn singing, and there was a lot of talking about how brilliant the church that we were in was, and not so much about Jesus, just them. And then, "Do you want to come downstairs and talk about..." And everyone was giving 10% of their income to the church and all this.
There's not much talk of Jesus. It's mainly about... Yeah, it's mainly about singing and making smoothies. Any good Christian, evangelical Christian youth group will have a smoothie maker.
Right.
And that is how they lure innocent teenagers in. That and condoms. No, not condoms.
Yeah, they don't use condoms.
No.
They just fuck you. So, they're back. That's my understanding of the if you have enough faith... those children won't get pregnant. That is that if you have enough faith in Jesus, Jesus will make sure that.
My sister knew some people from the deep south of America who were kind of really full-on Baptist comedians, and one of them had a phrase about, like, you know, about going to the next level with Jesus, that he's like, "I'm ready to take the condom off." With Jesus. Yeah, I know. Your appalled silence is appropriate.
Yeah, it's well, I talked about it in a recent podcast, but yes, we were in Indiana, and there's... basically, they had a graveyard to all the on the school's playing field over the school holidays. They had crosses put up for all the abortions within the county.
Oh my God!
So every sperm sacred. Don't waste one. I said they should have a cross for every sperm that had been wasted in masturbation as well. If they were really committed, and it was four children for every cross, which if you're going to do it fucking properly anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One a cross each, and one for every sperm.
Right.
I would say. The people here disagree. They think that's too far.
I'm just doing that thing where I'm just sort of jogging along, treading water, till I figure out how to re-enter the conversation.
It's fair enough. But yeah, I was my family were quite religious, so I mean, and they're less so now. But I was made to go to church when I was young, and so
how
that's
young?
Why.
Did you believe it?
The time. I mean, well, not every. I sort of did to begin with, and I remember being about 8 or 9 and thinking, "Oh, I should read a passage from the Bible every night to show how good I am." They gave you that little Burgundy New Testament, the good news, and I'd try and read a bit every night. But I realised quite quickly that it was nonsense. I mean, I did a routine. I did a show about my relationship with Jesus as well. And I one of the routines, the big routine about the Abraham begat Isaac, Isaac begat Jacob, which you'll know if you... where I memorised the first page of the New Testament, that basic premise of that routine, I realised when I was about 8 years old, and I said to my mum, I said, "Well, there's a big list of all the people that Jesus is related to, and it goes through Joseph at the bottom." And then I said, "But, Joseph isn't Jesus' dad, so why? That doesn't make any sense." Yeah. And my mum went, Yeah, and shut up. Go and and you saw that it's little things like that where you just that's the first page of the New Testament. That so when you realise there's things that don't make sense in this,
it's a shit first page.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean,
shit
it's not a way if you. It's not a first sentence to pull you in, is it? But a lot of the Old Testament stories are quite exciting. I mean, Sodom and Gomorrah and all of that, turning to pillars of salt and bum sex and all of that sort of stuff. Like, I think the thing is, some of the Old Testament stories are genuinely quite exciting. And I was always fascinated by the one about sacrificing the son and then God saying, no, I didn't mean it. And then saying, here's a goat instead. You know, I was always really worried as a child when I was very little, like, what if God hadn't got there in time with the goat? What if he'd
been...
What
if there'd been 20 minutes wait for that for Abraham and Isaac? There were less people around then. It was easier for God to get in. Less people believed in him as well. You know, so it was just like one tribe, really, then.
And
then
it was just one tribe.
To look after. And then it just got out of control.
Yeah. God has been a victim of his own success.
And some people think he's a different kind. You know, it's all the same God, isn't it, for most of these... Most of these
There's
religions.
A lot. I always like to think about all of them have this birth story of. But can I just say, I do have a theology degree, but I did almost nothing towards it. So other than my own personal crazy experiences of being a teenage Christian, I'm sort of fumbling my way with the theology here. I don't know if anyone's picking up on that.
It's all right, I can cover you. I know I'm obsessed.
Okay, great,
I'm obsessed
great.
With the. I'm always, and that's why I did my show about Jesus, because I'm, you know, I'm an atheist, but I'm just obsessed with him to a degree that is worrying. But I've always thought Stuart Lee will eventually become an archbishop. Eventually, just
what you've done there.
We're both so anti it that you know you can't. It's, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, people who are homophobic. You kind of go, yeah, come on. what's the real story here? We're both so anti-religion, it's because we both really believe Jesus is great.
Because deep down, you're trying to fight it, but you can't.
Mm. I think it's probably both. I want to bum Jesus. And that too far?
Well, no, not for me.
I really
not
love
for
it.
Me. I can't vouch for all of your listeners.
My listeners are fine with this. I think anyone who's been listening to this for a while who would be worried about that has probably disappeared by now.
I saw Anne Widdecombe
wearing
not
for
a
me.
Badge.
Yeah, I don't think Anne Widdecombe wants listeners. Hey, if she does, there's worse things Anne Widdecombe has to worry about in this podcast. Anne Widdecombe's on the list above Jesus.
What, people you want to bum?
Yeah, definitely. She's on my list. I've got a celebrity. Have you got a celebrity shag list of people you're allowed to have sex with that you're in your marriage? Because me and my wife have. She's just interested in Sawyer from Lost, which I think is a wasted vote because.
Yeah.
It's essentially she's getting.
Yeah, sure.
There's a few. Mine changes around a bit. I like Finella from Furchester Hotel, who's a puppet. But there's a big problem I have with puppets. I like.
Well, the trouble is, the hole's quite big in a puppet. You might not get a lot of traction. Matter.
But I thought Anne Widdecombe, I think you'd do all right. All You've right. got someone push. There's a person in there as well. So there's something to push against. Literally, they're push. I've thought it through. Anne Widdecombe's on there because, you know, the challenge. And. No, you're going to uncharted territory. You know, it's hard to find a virgin these days.
Depends where you look.
It's hard to find a 75-year-old virgin.
I think my husband and I have the same person on the list, which is just Beyonce.
Mm.
I think I haven't really thought too hard about it. It's quite an ad hoc thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think we haven't got a formal list.
No.
But I feel like, you know, we're sort of simpatico on it. Like if he came back and he met sort of. I think Angelina Jolie should be on everyone's list.
Okay.
Like, if you get the opportunity...
So if he came back with Angelina Jolie and shared it with you, that'd be fine.
But I think even if he didn't, I'd be like, fair play.
Yeah.
I'd be like, that's good, and I want to hear all about it, but, you know, try living with the woman.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like I'm going to lose out in the marriage stakes to Angelina Jolie. No. I feel fairly confident that I'm lower maintenance than Angelina Jolie. But I acknowledge that she is a kind of sexual tyrannosaur, and therefore you'd have to let that go.
Okay. That's nice of you. I don't think my wife is as... She would allow the ones on the laminated list, but no one else. Though I think now we've got a 2.5-year-old child and another one on the way. If my wife managed to have an affair, I would actually just... I'd be the same. I'd just be impressed.
Like,
how did you... We're so tired. How did you find the time? I'd just go, well, I would really go, well done.
I've got a 2.5 year old as well. I don't know how anyone has another child.
No.
I mean, you just sort of, you know, you become frightened.
You have to farm it out.
Yeah.
Farm it out to get some other people to do the work.
What, have the children? Wow, I'm getting a real insight into the Herring household here.
It's nice being a parent, though.
It's very nice being a parent. Yeah, you know, that's what you're supposed to say, isn't it? It's all worth it in the end, isn't it? For that one smile, my entire mental health that's now shot to pieces is worth it for that one smile.
They'll be gone in 15, 20 years as well. I mean, you get rid of them then.
The current climate.
Yeah, maybe a bit longer, yeah.
No, I'm glad to be a parent.
Yeah.
Let me set that for the record.
In case.
Because we're effectively broadcasting from the past.
We are, yeah, yeah.
So I wondered if you, would you, what as you as 49-year-old now, what would you like to say to your 50-year-old self as this message from the past?
Well, I need it to come the other way, really.
Wait,
because if I'd been...
It's going to be harder for me to engineer.
It is. But, you know, I think, like, at 40, if the 50-year-old me come, what the fuck are you worried about? You're really not old, don't worry.
Yeah.
You know, you have 6 more months of messing around, then you'll meet your wife and it'll be fine anyway.
Yeah,
but, I'm glad the way my life's turned out, really, although I wish I'd had kids earlier in a way. I should have 3 families by now with 3 different wives.
You should have a large number of angry people dotted around the country who kind of make it awkward at Christmas. Yeah. So you feel that's the kind of man you really ought to
be. Yeah, that's how it should be. But because I messed it all up, I've just got the one wife.
One loving wife.
One family.
And one family, and that's a disappointment.
We go places and there's no tension.
Well, no. Give it time.
She listens to this one. She doesn't listen to the backstage one.
It went weird backstage. That's the
thing. Oh, talking about that. You should become a monthly badger if you're not a monthly badger, because we do backstage interviews that are really good. And the one with Adam Buxton, which is, as we speak, has just gone up, the backstage interview, I asked a new emergency question, which I think is a cracker of an emergency question, but it might not. I think this is as good as have you ever flown a kite? That's how... I don't want to build it up too much. Let me just get the wording this right. I think in terms of discovering childhood memories... This will do it. Good. What is the? I think I can remember it anyway. What is the weirdest thing you have ever found in the embers of a bonfire? I'll do it again because I messed it up. What's the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire? The Adam Buxton response to this is the same. For a second there'll be nothing, and then it was like I'd opened him up like a. Have you heard it, Andy McCage? The emotional resonance. Got anything?
No. I still don't understand what Adam Buxton said. It was just a sort of series of sound effects and sort of an emotional kind of...
All right. Have you ever flown a kite?
Yes.
Yeah. How was that? Tell me about that.
It's shit flying a kite. It's massively overrated.
Yeah. Why?
Because it never goes up in the air. And when it does go up in the air, it becomes immediately terrifying. Because the force of the wind is frightening.
Yeah.
And there's other people flying kites around. And it's a weirdly sort of Edwardian hobby that doesn't feel appropriate in the internet age. And I'm constantly terrified of it being electrocuted. But mainly what I remember is kind of being made to run along very fast with my dad holding the kite a sort of 100 metres away, just flinging it repeatedly in the air while it kind of then nosedives onto the field over and over again whilst you sort of just run around and around. And then everyone gets cross and you go home.
How did that affect your relationship with your parents?
Have you seen Mary Poppins?
They did well.
They were good at flying kites, though, at the end.
It's a beautiful question. What is the strangest thing? I'm going to ask it to Julian Clary, and Julian Clary, I think, has a good answer to this, because I've been reading his book. You'll see when it works.
I have found, like...
Here we go!
Well, no, but I know where they came from. They're sort of melted, sort of weird remains of the inside of a clock.
Well, how do you not think that was a brilliant answer? What was the clock doing on the bonfire? What bonfire was this?
It just didn't feel very funny.
It was.
We were burning some stuff from a house that we bought that had an odd previous owner who had a.
How could you not see this was a brilliant question? Yeah.
That had a secret shed behind. A secret shed behind where they kept some chickens. And this man wouldn't let me in the house once we'd... You know, there's a period after you've put in the offer and,
yep.
and before you buy it, but you exchange contracts. Usually people let you go in and measure up or they'll just allow you. And we were not allowed to go there ever again.
Because he was too busy burning all his clocks.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But he made a kind of big pile of stuff and he was a slightly frightening man.
So
a big kind of melted, kind of warped grandfather clock inside, just the metal pendulums and like the melted hands of it. It was kind of, it's quite creepy actually.
Yeah. Oh, so you didn't have an answer to that question, did you? To my brilliant question. I told you it was a brilliant question. Do you think he was a time traveller? And he was burning his... He was just, and he was going on his final journey, and he thought, I'll burn all the clocks that I keep. Because of time travel, you've got to have loads of clocks in your house. But when you come back and go, yep,
yeah.
it is the time, it is the time I thought it was.
Maybe he brings a clock back from the past every time he travels, and that was a genuine Victorian grandfather clock that he then had to get rid of the evidence fast.
Yeah. You can just get clocks from the past by going to the shop and buying them.
By buying
you don't
them.
Have to go. If it was a clock from the future, that would be it. But like a clock from the past, just wait for the time to pass until the clock is old enough for you to be satisfied. There's loads Fair of enough. Grandfather clocks.
I guess you could just go
and then why set it on
shop.
Fire at the end?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying I understand the man. Just saying I moved into his house. That's all. Well, no, I bought his house.
Yeah.
It's now my, I didn't move into his house.
It's your house.
Suddenly I seem
it's
like the weirdo.
What did you do with the melted bit of the pendulum of the clock?
I just poked it a bit and left it there. And we burnt other stuff on top of it.
On top of it.
Yeah.
So it's still there.
Might be. Yeah. Growing.
Maybe it's, you know, once the... Was that a verse of the grandfather's clock? My grandfather's clock was too tall for his shelf.
Yep.
So we burnt it in a fire. and then that's when he came back to life like a phoenix. I don't know. So,
maybe
yeah.
A tiny tree will come out and like little grandfather clocks will grow on it like pears.
It could be. It's a bit like the Clangers. Yeah, remember them? They're still on.
They're still on with Michael Palin.
Yeah, they are.
He was one of my big crushes.
Yeah, and mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on my laminate.
Is he? Yeah. I think he might be on mine. I might add him on. He's certainly on my laminate of guests I would like to have on this show.
Yes.
But he's not coming on.
How of your laminate, how likely are you to actually meet any of them?
Well, many of them are puppets or fictional characters. But I like to set myself a challenge.
I once overheard boys in my school talking about which Disney characters they'd most like to have sex with.
Yeah.
And I heard one of them going, but I wouldn't do Pocahontas because she's rough. I thought they were having quite a forensic conversation about...
It's rather nice, I think. I think if I was going, Pocahontas would be near the top of
would
my...
Would she be in your top three?
She should be in the top. I think so. I don't... My daughter's mainly into Monsters, Inc. I would probably do Scully from that. Is he the little bowling ball one? Yeah, I'd do him. That's sort of like doing Zippy. It's a similar sort of thing. And she likes Finding Nemo. What would happen to Nemo when I found him. I've never watched Finding Nemo and I've only seen little bits of it.
It's very sad.
Well, I kind of want to sit down and watch the whole thing because it's quite a complicated... Because a fish gets taken out of the ocean into a dentist's.
Yeah.
And another fish has to find that fish in a tank in a dentist.
His dad has to find him.
That's quite a challenge. I'm interested to see how they overcome the... You know,
to be honest,
problem.
From a plot point of view, it's unconvincing. But from an animation point of view, it's beautiful.
They luckily find a fish that can read, I think, is that's part of the way they get there.
Yeah, well, the fish are very well trained.
But, you know, fish can only breathe underwater.
Yes, I did know that, which I think that's quite...
it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, it's relative.
I think most fish in that situation would go, oh, well, I'll just have some more kids.
No, the rest of the little Nemos and the wife, it's quite a harrowing beginning.
Okay.
Get eaten by a barracuda, and so only Nemo is left, which makes his father very over anxious. It's a film.
I'd find another fish, and there are plenty more fish in the sea. That's the thing.
I'd urge you to watch it because it's a very emotionally literate and complex film about the nature of fatherhood.
Yeah.
And I think you'd rather enjoy it.
Well, they're all, though, aren't they? They're all, like The Lion King, I've never seen. That's very disturbing.
I tell you who I fancied.
Yeah.
The fox. I was going to say the fox that plays Robin Hood. It does it, but obviously...
It's good you like the actor, not the character, because I'm the opposite. I like the characters, not the actors. I don't like him when he is Robin Hood. I like him in his real life backstage. They do some interviews with him behind the scenes. He's quite unlike Robin Hood.
He's got the best bits of Robin Hood, yeah. But then, you know, he's got a sort of... He's quite down to earth.
Yeah. What a shame we can't have sex with cartoons. What a shame. What a shame with children's cartoons. What a shame it is. I was going to... I was talking about a guest that I want to get on the show. And a guest I want to get on the show.
Can you help? Let me know if I can help. Yeah.
Well, because I asked Brian Blessed... I've asked a lot of guests about stories about Brian Blessed. I'm going to ask you. Okay. And I asked Brian Blessed to be on this series of the podcast, and through his agent. His agent went back to him and then he said, oh, no, he's not interested in being on the podcast. And then I was in...
Did the agent literally say, no, he's not
interested? Yeah, he said he doesn't think it's for him. And then I was in Wales with Miles Jupp. Miles Jupp came just... he didn't come to see my show. Oh, maybe he did, but he met up before the show just to say hello, because he lives in Monmouth, where I was gigging. And I was in the book. I met him in a bookshop, and the bloke behind the bookshop said, "Oh, Miles, would you like to interview Brian Blessed? He's coming to do book talks all around the country." So Brian Blessed was prepared to be interviewed by anyone who the bookshop owner happened to meet in a bookshop in Monmouth, but he didn't think this was a big enough deal for him to put on his book tour. But I know Brian Blessed's daughter. My brother-in-law does lots of plays with her, and I'd sort of said, "Oh, well, I know his daughter, maybe." And then Brian Blessed said to his daughter, "Oh, I was a friend of yours who was trying to get me on one of his shows. Mr. Tuna, I think it's Mr. Tuna." And it took her about 10 minutes to work out what he meant. But he would quite like to come on, I think. So we might get him on, is what I'm saying. But we'll see if we get him on. But in the meantime, because you're not Brian Blessed, who I would really want to be on.
Yeah, no, fair
enough. Have you ever met Brian Blessed? Do you have a story about Brian Blessed?
I have stories. I've never met him. I mean, I've got ones that I've heard and that we all know. Like, but my favourite of which is this claim that he has that he delivered a baby from a woman underneath a tree in Richmond Park and then bit through the umbilical cord.
Yes, well, I mean, I will be asking him about that. Yeah.
I had a more personal, that not many people know, from someone who was in a read-through with him for a show. He was very late, so they started the read-through. One of the parts was written for and played by an actor of small stature. I'm not sure. I'm not being snide or snitty here. I genuinely don't know what the term that they prefer to use is.
It's hobgoblin. Okay.
But anyway, there was an actor there all that time. Like, yeah. And my friend said, who was one of the writers, that Brian Blessed was 20 minutes late and crashed through, they started without him, crashed through the door, like mid-sentence, talking to no one except himself, just going, "And there's a junction on the M25! As if like he had been in the middle of telling someone about his journey and why he was late. And as he walked in, he stopped when he saw this guy and went, "Oh, there's a junction on the M25 and there was a lorry overturn." And he saw this small actor and he went, "I don't like that." And then went and took his seat, and inevitably by the end Brian Blessed and this actor were best friends. Now I don't know if any of that is true, so I wouldn't want to besmirch the name of Brian Blessed any more than he has already, but it is one of my favourite. I still sometimes when I'm driving along out of nowhere, if I'm just bored on a train, I'll just get, "I don't like those."
I think given that most of the stories Brian Blessed tells about himself can't possibly be true, I don't think it's possible to libel him, is it? I don't think it's possible.
I saw him interviewed with his daughter once.
Yes.
And who I presume is your
Rosalind,
friend.
Rosalind, yeah.
And I felt for her, actually, because although she clearly loves and respects her father, they were sat at the kitchen table, and the interviewer was trying to ask her questions. I think it was meant to be a touching kind of parent and child in showbiz sort of interview. And he would ask her a question like, "What's it like to be the daughter of someone like Brian Blessed?" And he would go, "Well, I think what she mainly feels is..." And it was like over and over again, this interviewer just going, "That's great, Brian. Thanks so much, Brian. But if I could just ask..." And she just sort of sat there so politely and nicely, and I just thought, that's your whole life, isn't it?
But imagine your dad being Brian Blessed. How cool that would be. That would be awesome. So you started your career by impersonating Margaret Thatcher.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
For a woman who worked at my dad's work. I mean, what happens is, you know, when you do interviews and things and like press for shows and like people always want to know, when did you first think you were funny? Who do you remember the first time you made someone laugh? And this sounds like something I've made up, but it's something I remembered during one of those interviews. And I was really pleased with it because then I had something to say that was true for all the other times someone would ask me that in an interview. And it is true that there was a woman called Camilla at my dad's work, and I was there when I was about six, and it must have been half term or something. So I was at his work just sort of, you know, being looked after. And I started saying, my name is Margaret Thatcher, as a six-year-old. And she laughed. I didn't know who Margaret Thatcher was. I just knew she was this woman who was on the telly that made everyone angry. And so I just said it over and over again. Hello, I'm Margaret Thatcher. And she thought this was the most amazing thing coming out of this six-year-old. And she gave me 50p. So I like to think that's my first paid gig. I turned pro that very day.
It was a good satire of her.
Yeah.
I think that's... But you were doing lots of... It's interesting because you did some comedy at university, but then you did stuff in production. You did all the Challenge TV.
I did, and ran. I worked for a show called Dream Makers.
Yeah.
Where we made people's dreams come true.
That's nice.
Yep. Well, I mean, only if their dream was within budget. If you were a child, you know, and you needed your dream to come true because something had happened, but your dream was to sit in a wheelbarrow in a bow tie, then you were very likely to get on the show. Anything more complicated than that. We had a website where people could write on it, like, people they knew or friends or family that they felt deserved a nice thing to happen. And we would have to verify... as a member of the production team, we would have to verify that the person they were talking about, A, that it was true that this thing had happened to them that made them deserve a treat.
Right.
And two, that this was their dream. So my job was to go to these places incognito, try and work my way into these strangers' houses and establish as fast as I could whether something tragic had happened to them, what it was, and what their dream was. And the worst one was a woman who had some awful stuff happen to her with people, you know, husbands dying, three husbands dying. I mean, awful stuff. A lovely woman who lived in Wales. Her daughter said her dream was to fly in a hot air balloon. So I said to her daughter, how can I get to see her and get her to say all this to me to verify it without her knowing who I am or spelling a rat? So she said, oh, she really loves antiques. So if you phone her up and say you're from BBC Homes and Antiques magazine and that she's won a visit, that she'll let you in, basically, and she'll talk to you. So I did that. And I did get in there and we started to strike up a conversation. But what she made me do was value everything she had in there. Whilst I was trying to get her to tell me about all the husbands she's had that had died and that her dream was to go up in a hot air balloon. And in the end, she brought me down this rocking horse and asked my advice about whether it would affect the value if she had it repaired. I was like, I have to get the fuck out of here before I destroy all these women's antiques. So it was quite a stressful job. So I thought going back into comedy would be easier. Yeah.
That's quite a good way of just conning old ladies out of money and stuff.
Yes.
You pretend you work for Homes and Antiques.
Yeah. I hope I haven't... I mean, this isn't a kind of manual.
Ask them about the stuff.
Yeah.
And then say, what is your dream? And, well, they're in the hot air balloon. So you came... But you were very quickly successful, really. You kind of had one of those things that doesn't happen at Edinburgh.
Yeah,
where you went and did an Edinburgh show and then someone said, come and do a TV show.
Yeah, I did. It was one of those weird, fast things. I did... When I was 25, so 13 years ago now, I'd spent 4 years doing TV production, doing stuff like question checking for Challenge TV and stuff like that. And then I thought, I really do regret not going into comedy out of university. I saw friends of mine who had, friends I'd done comedy with at university. And I thought, I'll regret it if I don't give it a go. So, and now seems like a good time, 25, you know, I haven't really got anything to lose. So I wrote some monologues and I did them in pubs. And some guys saw me and they got me into a group called Ealing Live, which was a big sketch show, which was every Thursday at the Ealing Studios. And it was a kind of really brilliant team of 15 or so sketch comedians, most of whom are the best sort of, you know, they're all the great people on TV doing sketches. And so I got into that. And then I did that for a year. And then I thought, I'll just do an Edinburgh show because, again, I haven't got anything to lose. No, there's no expectation. And I was starting to do celebrity spoofs. And it was around the time Heat magazine was at its peak. So it kind of all just kind of weirdly came together. I think there were a couple of TV channels looking for a kind of version of Heat magazine on the telly. And it just so happened that that's what I was doing. So even though every night I was playing in a room of 50 seats in a cave in the Pleasance, and I was on at 11:30 at night, And it's at the Cellar. I don't know if any of you have ever been in there, but what would happen, it would be so hot and the sweat of other people's audiences throughout the day would sort of evaporate off them. And then by the time it got to my show, it would have condensed on the ceiling and it would rain down on my audience as a kind of fine mist. And I would normally have about four or five people in, but like they say, like the kind of apocryphal Edinburgh, if you just have one or two people in who make decisions about telly, then it can all happen weirdly quickly.
Yeah.
So that is what happened. I gigged a lot before that, but yeah, nothing like the kind of period of time other people have put in.
Yeah.
Do you feel that that was an advantage or a disadvantage? Because you did the three series, did you, of Ass Show, which is very good, and there's lots of clips of it on YouTube. I didn't see it at the time, but there's lots of...
I did lots of song spoofs, pop spoofs and stuff that people have put on there and things. Yeah, at some point I probably ought to monetize it. Is that what you're supposed to do now?
Don't bother, don't worry. Do a book of emergency questions.
Is that your book of emergency questions?
That's my book of emergency questions. That's how you do it. But then you use all that money to make more podcasts, then you go, oh shit. Got at some point, it's got to stop, hasn't it?
What you want is a giant hairy piggy bank called the Brian Blessed Fund. And you can put a pound in, and then eventually you'll have enough money to lure him on.
Yeah, I don't think it would take that much money. I don't think it would.
£50 and some new crampons.
Because when I met him, he said he was going to Mars. Like, not as for a TV show, literally. So I'm training to go to Mars.
Just for the weekend.
I said, for a TV show? I said, no, I'm going to Mars. And, like, literally, yeah, John Biggs was about going to Mars.
Okay.
And then he didn't go to Mars.
No.
I think he did a TV show about going to Mars, but I think he thought he was going to Mars. I think they'd select out of everyone, they thought, who can we get to go with the first mission to Mars? Shall we get, like, a 65-year-old, quite unfit man? Actually, that's not fair.
He climbs Everest all the time.
He's not the fittest bloke in the world, though, is he, Brian Breston?
If you're going to climb Everest twice a year, you must be quite fit. I mean, what's your benchmark, Richard? Fucking hell.
I wouldn't be sending him to Mars, because it's a long journey to Mars.
It is a long journey.
Think of the other astronaut. If he's on his own, it's fine. He can entertain himself.
I'm pretty sure you have to have some quite serious, like, biometric personality testing.
Maybe. Yeah. So you did three series of... I mean, it seemed that you did the Big Ass Show and then it stopped and then you sort of thought, I'm giving up comedy almost. Is that fair or not quite?
I wouldn't say giving up comedy, but I did three series and I was really... I'm really proud of them. I'm glad I did them. And they were definitely, like, representing what I was doing, what I wanted to do comedy-wise at the time, more or less. Although there's always a bit of bartering about when it comes to TV, you know, I'll have a bit of that and then, you know, but you have to do a bit of that. It was always like I could have one Jesus' Girlfriend sketch as long as I did two Lily Allen sketches. It was a kind of trade-off with the channel quite a lot. But I was really pleased with it. But then I just knew by the end of the third series that I didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't want to do those sorts of sketches, those sort of big noisy sketches and pop spoofs and all that sort of stuff. And I'd really enjoyed it, but I didn't want to do that anymore. And so it just can be quite hard when... you want to do something different in a different style or whatever, but people know you for one thing. It just takes a really long time to sort of turn a ship around that. So, and also I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, and I wasn't, like, I'm doing live comedy again now, but more like stand-up, and I didn't know if I could do that then, and it didn't really occur to me. So I had a kind of 3 years of sort of slightly drifting around, knowing I didn't want to do that, but not quite knowing what to point myself at, and just sort of wondering, sort of slightly pathetically wondering, sort of sitting on it. If it was a black and white beach, you know, in a black and white film staring out on the horizon, that's sort of what I did for 3 years, which isn't very funny, essentially. So,
No, but I think, you know, I think that's a part of forging a career, and most people will go through something like that at some point. I think especially, I mean,
similar.
We were sort of successful quickly, and then you suddenly go, oh, and then it stops, and then you suddenly go, oh, what am I going to do?
Mm.
And you have this kind of wilderness period where you're trying to work out what to do next.
Yeah.
And it's an odd thing, I think, when you've been projecting. You know, I think if it's quick, what I regret is that it was, even though we worked hard and there was 5 years or so before we got a TV show, 5 years to get a TV show is still incredibly fast.
Yeah.
And you're projecting that position and then it's taken away from you, but also you don't really appreciate, because you just thought, oh, this has happened, you don't really appreciate it unless it's a long form thing that you're building up to something. So I think it can sort of be a bit weird when suddenly you're sort of plucked and then fated and then suddenly it's like, oh, you know, maybe not now.
Yeah, I think
was it a little bit getting out? Was there a little bit of that, or was it
no,
really
I
your
wasn't,
decision?
this really sounds like I'm an arsehole, but it was actually my decision not to do a fourth series. Mm. I was offered it and I didn't want to do it. I was so definite. Whether or not that was the right thing to do, I'm not sure. But I think I was so clear that I didn't want to do sketches and I felt like I had to make a really clean break. Like people would be like, oh, can you come and ride a chopper bike down a red carpet dressed as Lily Allen just for a kind of PR stunt? Or can you come and open this shop pretending to be the Queen? And I had to be like, yeah, I can see the fun in that. But if I keep doing little things like that, I'll never get away from this.
Yeah.
So it was, I just wasn't sure how to be creatively. I know that sounds a bit pompous, but I didn't know what, I was like, I want to write a book. I want to write long form things. I want to have a slightly different sort of, I just wanted to be a different sort of performer and writer to what I'd been. And that sounds a bit spoilt, but I didn't quite know how to make that happen. And I needed a bit of time, I think, just to grow up and get used to it all.
Sure.
And a lot of my show had been promoted in like lots of pictures. I was always in the Sun. We always gave the Sun a picture exclusive, and every single week without fail they'd put a picture of me dressed as a celebrity and the picture of the celebrity next to me and point out that I was not as thin as the celebrity. Like that, it was like, but we would continue to give them the picture exclusive because the producer and the channel were like, let's give it to the Sun because at least there's a picture of you in the Sun that will tell people it was on. So you just sort of look at that and go, I don't know if I want to do that for the rest of my life. So it was just sort of trying to move myself into a slightly different bracket, I think.
Yeah.
And that's that doesn't, you know, that's quite a hard thing to do. And I think I'm still on that journey, I suppose.
Yeah. But you did write a book.
I did write a book, yeah.
You crowdfunded it, a bit sad. And so that's a book that's, oh bloody hell, that's another level. Which is Brenda Monkey's Funny.
Yes, that's my book.
Yes. Well, tell us about your book.
It was a book about a woman who becomes a stand-up comedian, and I think it was definitely a good, I really loved writing it. It was my favourite thing I've done so far, I think, in some respects. And it was the story of a woman who decides to become a stand-up comedian, and it's the first year of her career, and it begins in Edinburgh and ends in Edinburgh. And it's her first year as a stand-up, and I just really loved writing it. It was really great. I'd like to write her whole life. I'd like to write Brenda Monk is funny, Brenda Monk is famous, Brenda Monk is forgotten, Brenda Monk is fucked. And then a word beginning with F that means having a massive triumphant comeback, which I haven't managed to find yet.
Yeah.
Anyone who can think of one, please let me know. So that's what I'd like to do. But all of that seems like a bit of a lofty ambition, a bit out of my reach at the moment, given that I haven't written any of it. Just 500,000 words to go.
That's good. It's good to have a
But I think that I did a little book tour after that, which got me into the idea of being myself on stage, which I think then led directly to what I'm doing more of now, which is doing stand-up.
Yeah. And you wanted, like Brian Blessed, you want to be an astronaut. Is that what your show's about?
Yes.
So I don't know why we were laughing at Brian Blessed earlier.
No. No, I'm with Brian Blessed. Can you imagine the show of me and Brian Blessed going to Mars together?
So is that your new show for Edinburgh?
Yeah, I'm doing a show called I Could Have Been an Astronaut. Last year it was I Was a Teenage Christian. Next year I think I'll do I Am a Something, but I haven't figured out what that is yet. But this year, yeah, it's about my hobby, which is space and astronomy. I love space and astronomy. It's my hobby. A hobby is anything that you like but you're shit at. Otherwise, obviously, it would be your job. So I love space and astronomy, but I'm terrible at maths, and I've always been terrible at maths. I was taught maths very badly. As I said, our convent school didn't do maths. So I didn't really start maths properly till I was about 9. I started to think, what if I'd been better at maths? What if I'd been taught better at maths? Maybe I could have been an astronaut. Like, I could be an astronomer.
Yes.
You know, like, people, yeah, it's happened. There's precedent. Brian May
became
an astrophysicist. Brian Cox was a keyboard player.
Blessed's gone to Mars. It's got to be called Brian, though.
That's my worry. Is that a prerequisite? A hard prerequisite of being called Brian?
Because that's
where I'm going to fall down on it. But it's like it's about like what would you have become if things had been slightly different, and what makes you what you are now, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, good. Where are you on?
The Pleasance.
Pleasance, what time?
The Pleasance above at 6:20 p.m.
Oh, you could realistically, you could see your show.
Yes.
And then you could have like a very, very quick drink and come and see my show.
Oh, really? Where
I'm
are
on
you
a 7, on? I'm on a 7:30 at Pleasance 1. So we're
oh, yeah, we're all right. That's
we
all
can
right.
do it.
I don't think
I'm going to come and see your show, and I doubt you'll come and see mine.
I might come and see yours. You've thrown the gauntlet down.
Can you do
but
that?
Thanks a lot, Richard.
Can you do that? Like, I find it very difficult to go and see anything just before or just after. You've done your show.
Just after, particularly. Just
before. Oh, so you'll be tidying up your stuff.
Yeah, I'll be tidying up all my space stuff and having a beer. Do you not want me to come and see your show? You seem to be basically saying, don't fucking come and see my show.
I think there'll be some room at the back. You can sneak in the back, is my guess. Oh, and I've just heard from the box office. It's very nearly sold out.
I'm amazed you wouldn't be sold out after those five stars from the Times.
Yeah, amazed. That was an amazing review. I don't read my reviews, but people tell you when you get good ones. That's how it works.
If you've gone 2 weeks into the festival and no one's mentioned any reviews, it means they're all shit.
You're from High Wycombe.
Kind of. I was born in High Wycombe.
Okay. When did you leave High Wycombe?
About 6 weeks after I was born.
Oh, okay, you might not be able to answer this question. I don't even know. What is the tallest building in High Wycombe?
Is it the Wycombe Swan?
I don't know.
Oh.
I couldn't find out. I think it might be the Eden. Every time I did it, the Eden Shopping Centre came up, but I think that's just a big building. I don't think it's tall.
But High Wycombe's in a very deep valley.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean buildings can't be tall.
No, but
you don't measure buildings from the top of a hill. You measure them from the bottom of the building.
No, fair enough. You can put
it at the bottom of a valley. It's still as tall as it would be if it was on the top of a mountain.
There's a difference between
being
the highest and the tallest, isn't there, or something?
I think so. I'm not saying it's the highest above sea level.
I'm getting flashbacks to my time on Stakeout.
Yeah, I bet. What is your favourite High Wycombe celebrity?
James Corden.
Oh, yeah, he's from
Isn't he everybody's... He I was born in High Wycombe Hospital.
Yeah.
And years later, because to be fair, I did live near High Wycombe in Amersham.
Yeah.
I worked for 6 weeks in the holidays, summer holidays, in High Wycombe in the washing up all the operating equipment.
Okay.
Next to the morgue.
Yeah.
In the basement of the hospital.
Wow.
And you have to wear kind of scrubs, and you're below the operating theatres, and they send down all the equipment in dumb waiters.
Wow.
Like you get in a restaurant, and you have to open it up, and you get this kind of tray of blood and cartilage and bone clogged metal stuff. And then you have to wash it all up in industrial washing up stuff.
Yeah.
But I got that job because I'd registered with a local temp agency, and technically it came under catering. Because it was washing up.
Yeah.
But it was quite well paid. I went completely mad, but it was quite well paid.
Catering for the dead.
Yes.
That's going to be the name of this episode. I can tell you, I'm writing it down. Because I often have trouble remembering anything that's happened in the episodes after they've happened. Because, it's just rubbish, isn't it, this? I mean, the whole podcast. So it's nice to get a title. I am hungry. I'm surprisingly getting through. My stomach's not rumbling yet.
No.
Might do by next week with Julian Clary. I'll ask you some emergency questions. I asked you some rude ones backstage. I want to ask you a rude one, but the problem with this book is there's so many, it's hard to find specific ones. I'll try and remember what it is. If you had to insert a popular chocolate bar into your anus, if you had to do it, which one would you choose?
If I had to do it.
I'm going to ask you, because if I ask Julian Clary these questions, he'll think I'm being... But I ask everyone. That's the thing.
A twirl.
Is it twirl? Yeah, I'd say twirl.
Because they come in packs of two. They're quite soft, but they kind of have a nice rippled, sort of smooth outer coating.
That would help it.
Trying to picture a chocolate tampon.
Yeah.
A chocolate bumhole tampon.
You could screw it. It would have a slight screw. Which, especially if you
don't
have a
pull
slight,
it out quickly.
If your anus is slightly dimpled or threaded up, that would have. You might have to go to a cosmetic surgeon and say, "Can I have an anus that is the reverse of a twirl?" I'm not going to tell you why. I reckon they'd work out why.
Also, if you run out of twirl, there's another one in the pack.
There is. Well, you would run out, because they melt very easily, even if you're just holding them in your hands.
That's true, yeah.
That's the problem with the twirl, I think. You have to
eat them fast.
You do.
Yeah. You could keep it in the fridge. If you were going to insert it into your anus, I would recommend keeping it in the fridge for an hour or so.
That's a good idea.
If you had to put it
in. If you had to, then say, can I put it in the fridge
can
first?
At least...
And the person with the gun to your head said, well... I don't know if I've got time. I need to know. I need to know which one it is and to watch it happening. And then you may be free to go. Not saying whether you are or not. Good. Good answer.
Wow. Quite a capricious kidnapper.
This one. Oh, that I found it. And the question is anally violated as well, not just put...
Anally violated?
Yes, you have to be anally violated.
Wow, No, but that's a whole different thing now. If it's like non-consensual.
I think it's consensual, but just you say, can I be violated with it? I don't want it to be screwed in easily.
Oh, okay.
So it can't be a 12. Because right, okay. I'm prepared for with my anus transplant.
This is the new 50 Shades of Grey, isn't it?
All right, I'm sorry, that was a rude question. If you had to do a human centipede with two other people, if you had to, I'm not saying you want to, but if you had to.
No, okay, well, let's clarify, it's not that I want to.
And you were in the middle.
If I had to.
You're in the middle of the centipede. Which two people would you like to be in front of you and behind you?
Well, I think you and Stu.
Whose
shit am I eating and who's eating my shit?
Yeah, I think I know. I had to ask.
But, you know, I was a big fan of Fist
you
of
were,
Fun.
Well,
You've tapped into one of my fantasies.
I did say last night, well, I think we talked to Dan Skinner about it, but when we were doing the commentaries for Fist of Fun Series 1, I think, we were just, and I hadn't, you know, I hadn't watched them for 20 years and I wouldn't have known you at the time. But there's a shot that basically starts on you in the audience and then pulls out from the audience. And as they're applauding, it's Katie Brand. I go, fucking hell, it's Katie Brand. Even our audience is more famous and successful than I am. So it was quite a shock to see
you. I hate to break it to you, but I'm sitting next to a guy called Daniel Clarkson, who originated the Potted Potter, which has become an international success. We were at school together.
Bloody hell.
And we were both obsessed with Fist of Fun.
Wow.
Yeah, and we got tickets. We're very excited.
In a way, you both owe me a percentage. In a way, I created Potted Potter. Is that right? In a way.
In a way.
And then in a way, that means I created Harry Potter, which means in a way... No. I created Alan Partridge, that's what I did. Didn't get any money for that. Have you seen Lego Batman?
No.
Because I watched it the other day and everyone had been...
Did you enjoy it?
I'm not going to tell you about it, you need to watch it.
Okay.
There's two things that annoy me, and they also annoyed someone else called Nathaniel Tapley on Facebook. They don't call Daleks, they call them British robots, which makes you think that they didn't get the rights to
Lego
Daleks.
What?
They call them some like British scary robots or something, and then the nerds will understand what you mean. It's very insulting to us British people because we know what the Daleks are, and you don't have to be a nerd. A lot of people are nerds who like them, but people know they are. But also, they've got Ralph Fiennes plays the butler in it, and there's Voldemort in it, but Ralph Fiennes doesn't play Voldemort.
This is Lego
Batman.
But why are there Daleks?
They've got all the franchise. I don't know how they've done it. It must be very complicated, but they've got basically all
they've
the other...
They've got Daleks
they've
in
got,
Lego
Batman. Because it's Lego. People think, oh, Lego, we'll get some Lego figures out
of it. Is this a dream you had after
a lot of
cheese?
No, it's true. Has anyone else seen Lego Batman? It's not that good, I don't... Do you like it? He didn't like it, did he? She liked it, didn't she? And you had to pretend you liked it, didn't you, at the time. Then she didn't like it, and now I've broken out of that relationship. She was going, yeah, I like it. He was going... It was childish, wasn't it, mate? It was unexpectedly childish, wasn't it? When you went to Lego Batman, you thought, this is going to be a gripping hour and a half of... And then suddenly, it's way all made out of Lego. They're not even made out of Lego. It's just pretend. They've just been made to look like they're made out of Lego, and they're not made out of Lego. That's what you're thinking, wasn't it? Yeah. It's not very good.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I haven't seen it.
And I'm annoyed because loads of people said it was good at the time.
Yeah.
So then I paid £5.50 to watch it on Sky because I don't go out now.
I think this is what's known as a conversational cul-de-sac.
That is not for you to say. All right, you get an emergency question. What swear word would you like repeatedly shouted by a drunk man at your funeral? The drunk man is turning up regardless and is going to shout something. So you may as well choose.
I think my favourite swear word, which I think should always be shouted, which is cunt. I would love someone to shout, a drunk man to shout cunt repeatedly at my funeral. I think it would shake things up a bit. You know, just get everyone out of their complacent comfort zone at my funeral. Just, you know.
Sad.
I think it's a... Did you just whisper sad?
It would be sad. It would be sad for the people mourning you.
What? Not if they knew it was what I wanted. It's what... take this.
She did say.
Clinton family, it's my last request at my funeral. Please arrange for a drunk man, preferably Richard, to come and shout cunt repeatedly over my coffin.
And then if anyone complains, I'll just click. I'll have this bit of the podcast ready to go. She is. She, that's what it is. What she wants. Literally
it's
what she
wanted. This is the evidence. This is the evidence.
All right. Well, I'll do one that I haven't. Let's find a new one. What is your favourite bun that is named after a place?
Is this a trick?
No, there's a few.
Is there?
Yeah. Well, there's at more. Least two. There's loads.
What is my favourite bun that's named? There's not loads. There's not.
Chelsea?
Yeah.
Bath?
Mm-hmm. Bath bun?
Yeah.
That's not. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Okay.
And? Belgian bum? Belgian bum? What's your favourite bum then? The Belgian bum is a good bum. They're a big full
What's
bum.
What's the difference
then?
Between a Belgian bun and a Chelsea bun?
One's from Belgium. There's the QPR bun that you can get in a cafe near me. It's Chelsea bun. But they call it a QPR bun because it's near QPR.
Because Les Ferdinand likes them. I am.
Do you like any buns named after
I like
places?
Chelsea buns,
yeah.
But not because they're from Chelsea.
No.
I haven't had a Chelsea bun for a very long time. It was the sort of thing you'd go to the bakery in the morning on a Saturday in the 1950s.
Yeah.
But it did used to happen where we would go and you could get you could choose a bun.
Yeah.
And I would choose a Chelsea bun. In fact, I think a Chelsea bun is an iced bun that's a Belgian bun. I'm glad we're... I mean, this is what I came for. This kind of top-level banter.
I want to know some other buns that are named after places. Have we got any other suggestions? Eccles cake. That's right.
Pontefract
cake. People don't know what that is, but it's very far from being a bun.
I would like...
It's not even a cake.
Well, if we're expanding the parameters to this extent, then can't I have a Viennese whirl?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, well, that's my favourite, Viennese whirl.
I tell you what you can have. You can have a Viennese twirl. that's what it's called. That's what it's called if it's stuck up your ass.
If I had to.
If you had to. Would you like a Viennese twirl, madam?
I feel like if those were the demands of a kidnapper, that you could probably negotiate with that kidnapper quite successfully. Like, I feel like... I think I'd almost breathe a sigh of relief if after kind of hours of tension and fear, it was revealed that that was what I had to... That was all I had to do. Was just put some chocolate in my bumhole. I say, if it's good enough for Marianne Faithfull, it's good enough for me.
No, it wasn't in her bumhole, was it?
But well, we don't know.
I don't
want to intrude on her.
Right, I wanted to ask you about this because I didn't see this, but you were in Psycho Bitches.
Yes.
And you played both Medusa and Emily Bronte, according to IMDb. That's quite a range.
Yes, thank you. I also played Diana Dawes.
Did you?
And Mary Shelley. It was good. The producer of that, Ben Cavey, phoned me like years ago and said, I've got this idea to do historical figures, female historical figures in a sketch show. Do you think that's a good idea? And I said, I think that's a fucking brilliant idea. Then, as is often the way in television, about 4 years passed. And then I got a call saying, yeah, it's going ahead, they're doing it. And it was really good.
Yeah.
They got so many amazing women. Like, it was just really nice. But a lot of us were doing just one individual sketches, so you'd kind of be kind of crossing paths across... like the outside area, you know, the production area outside the studio with all these sort of Frances Barber going in and Michelle Gomez going in and Sharon Horgan going in and Julia Davis going in just individually.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
It was Rebecca Front was the therapist.
Yeah. It was really, really good. Cool. Yeah, it was great. I played Gertrude Jekyll. I often had to play ones that were noisy and turned into werewolves. That's my USP, I think, is this kind of, if you need someone, if in doubt, shout, get me. But I had to play Diana Dawes as a West Country woman obsessed with pork pies.
Okay.
And Emily Bronte as a tiny puppet, which was a lot
now
of fun.
Now I'm interested.
Yeah. and what was the other? Oh, Medusa. Yeah, it was a good two series. I think, you know, the trouble is obviously with those things, the joke lands based on people having a kind of top-line piece of knowledge about the famous person.
Yeah, well, some of those are quite, I mean, not obscure, but quite special.
Well, the trouble is history being what it is,
yeah,
because of the patriarchy, Richard.
Yeah.
You do actually run out of women who were famous enough, even throughout the whole of history.
Was that because the women weren't good enough in history? Is that my fault?
Well,
that the women didn't do anything in history apart from have snake in their hair, which didn't even happen?
Just sitting around plaiting things and spinning and whinging. That's what women did in history, wasn't it? And then Lady Godiva.
Yeah, Lady Godiva. Now we're talking. That was good. I was only joking. Women probably did most of the stuff in history. You know, what would Christopher Columbus do if his wife hadn't been doing the washing up? How would he have got across?
Women have always played a very important, supportive role throughout history.
I like the idea of Christopher Columbus' wife being on the ship. We'd still been all right, mate. We'd have been okay. We probably had a bloke to do it downstairs. Yeah, we don't hear about him. They've turned against me now. Due to my inherent sexism. If it's now wrong to be a sexist...
What can you do?
Well, I mean, you know...
I don't know. The women have won, that's the thing. The women have won. What we need now is, you know, men's rights.
Yeah.
Are you one of those...
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you one of those forum posters?
I am, yeah.
For Men's Anonymous?
Yeah, when will there be an International Men's Day? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. We'll find out one time.
I applaud you every year,
you.
As most of the internet does, for your fine work in telling people when International
Men's
Day
is. I'm a very
is.
Confusing figure. I've been criticised by both anti-feminists and feminists for a lot of my work, so, you know, I don't... But, you know, I don't need a whole room full of people giving me the silent treatment when I make a sexist comment. I've got my wife for that, all right? I've got my wife because I make many sexist comments. So it wasn't, don't go, ooh, because it was, oh, fucking, I've had enough of you. Can't wait for next week's audience. They're gonna get where I'm coming from. It's been lovely to talk to you, Katie. We've run out of time, unbelievably. I haven't talked to you about Nanny McPhee and all sorts of stuff.
But we still found time for an anally insert.
When will there be psycho wankers about men in history? When will that happen?
I think you're proving the.
when will there be a sketch show with all men in it? That is what we want to know. When will that happen?
Then justice will finally be done.
It's been fantastic talking to you, ladies and gentlemen. It's Katie Brown. Listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Katie Brown. The music is by Pest. Thank you to the British Comedy Guide, thank you to the Leicester Square Theatre, and thank you to Go Faster Strike for all their participations within this enterprise. Thank you also, I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. He's bothered to turn up this week, so that's nice. It's a fuzz, gofasterstrike.com and Sky Potato Productions. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Emergency questions book at gofasterstripe.com/EQ. £10 for 500 plus emergency questions. 2p per question is lots of fun. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle.
Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.